Thursday, 11th of July. Here. Josie pushes a fan of photographs across the table towards Alex. My girls. Alex lifts her gaze to Josie and smiles. Oh, she says. Amazing, thank you. The first photograph shows two chubby toddlers in thick knitted jumpers and jeans holding hands and standing in what looks like the big sandpit in Queen's Park. The older girl has hair the same colour as Josie's, but more vivid in tone. The younger one has sandy blonde hair with the type of ringlets at the ends that will never grow back after her first haircut. Which one is which? She asks. This one, Josie points at the one with the ringlets, is Roxy. That one, she indicates the one with chestnut brown hair, is Erin. They're adorable, Alex says, just adorable. Josie nods and smiles and watches as Alex moves on to the next photograph. It's the two girls side by side, outside the school where Alex's children go, wearing the same sky blue polo shirts and navy bottoms that her children were wearing when they left the house this morning. Roxy's first day, says Josie, a note of pained nostalgia in her voice. I cried for about 4 hours that day. Alex glances at Josie. Oh God, really? She thinks back to Leon's first day at school, returning to an empty house for the first time in 7 years, and the euphoria of knowing that it could be about her again for a while. She'd never understood the weeping mums outside the playground. I was bereft. I didn't know what I would do. Suddenly, all this time, suddenly all this silence. Alex thinks of her conversation with Mandy in the school office and says, "And the girls, how did they get on at primary school? Did they like it?" She notices Josie tense slightly, her shoulders lifting towards her ears. "Oh, you know," she says. "Not really. You see, Erin, my oldest, she's always had some problems. Not quite sure how you describe it, really. The teachers called it global developmental delay. But I didn't agree with that. She was just a bit lazy, I think, a bit passive. Hard to get a reaction out of her. Hard to know what she was thinking. And then Roxy was the opposite. Oppositional defiant disorder, the teachers called it. I think I did agree with that. You could never tell Roxy anything. She would never, ever comply. She was always angry. Used to hit me. Hit her sister. Just the angriest, angriest child." Josie shudders at the memory. So between them, with their problems, no, it wasn't the happiest of times. And high school was no better, of course. Alex doesn't respond, just goes to the last of the three photographs. "This is the last one I have of the two of them," says Josie, touching the edge of the photo gently. "Just before Roxy left home." Alex holds her breath as she absorbs the image. It is not what she was expecting at all. She cannot relate the girls in this photograph to the girls in the other photographs. She cannot believe that they're the same people. The girl who once had sandy ringlets is now a stocky girl, wearing her hair scraped back hard from a wide, greasy forehead, with rings pierced through both her nostrils and her septum. Erin, who had once been a glowing, sweet-faced child with an air of shy vulnerability, is stony-faced and scrawny to the point of emaciated, with dark circles around her eyes and her hair hanging limp on both sides of her face. "Look different, don't they?" Josie says with a brittle edge to her voice. "Yes, yes, they do." There's a tart silence before Josie shuffles the three photographs back together and slides them into her shoulder bag. "Please don't judge me." Alex flicks her eyes towards Josie. "Sorry?" Josie opens her mouth, words waiting on the tip of her tongue but not being spoken. And she smiles tightly and says, "Nothing, nothing." She places her bag on the floor, pulls her headphones towards her and says, "Should we start?"
This is a recording from Alex Summers' podcast, captured on the 11th of July, 2019.
Walter couldn't cope with them. He was away a lot. He'd been made redundant by the company he'd been working for in London and ended up getting a much better job with an electrical company that worked mainly out of Scotland and the North East. So he'd be away for days on end, just back for the weekends. I have to say I liked it. For so many years, I'd existed only as half of a couple and as a mother. I'd never been alone, not really. You know, before the girls were born, I didn't even have a key to our flat. I just used to have to wait in for him to get home from work. Just wait in all day. So I liked those years when Walter worked away during the week, when it was just me and the girls. We were happy. We were free. I let the girls be themselves, gave them room to breathe. But then Walter would get back at the weekends and, well, everything would change. And not in a good way.
...11 a.m. Walter has been to the barber's and, to Josie's great disappointment, looks almost exactly the same. She masks her dismay and thanks him for making the effort. He grunts in response, and she knows that she's pushing him very close to the precipice of his own tolerance of her. Their marriage sometimes feels like a huge ship that left harbour facing one way and has slowly, lugubriously, turned 180 degrees, headed off in the wrong direction, and then stalled. Somehow, Josie had taken control of the deck, but it had turned out that she was as bad at steering the ship as Walter had been. And ever since, they'd been going round and round in circles, staring disconsolately into the middle distance, waiting to be rescued. Until Alex. Josie takes three jars of baby food from the cupboard and heats them up for Erin. She places them on a tray with a spoon and a pouch of Ella's kitchen pureed mango and apple. She leaves the tray outside Erin's room. She kisses her fingertips, puts them to the door, and then goes to her bedroom to get ready for work. When Josie gets back from work, Walter has been clothes shopping. He doesn't do her a fashion parade. He merely cocks his head at the Primark bags and says, "Go on then, have a look." He's done quite well. A nice navy blue casual long-sleeved shirt and a pair of camel-coloured chinos. He's even got some new socks. "Good," she says to him with a nod. "Very nice." He grunts. She can sense him shutting down. She gets started on a shepherd's pie. It's Walter's favourite of her small repertoire of dishes, and even though she's trying to be more experimental with food these days, yesterday she made a dish with couscous, halloumi and chickpeas, today Walter deserves something he likes. Then she takes the dog for a walk around the block. She thinks she sees Roxy three times in the 10 minutes she's out of the house, and the second she gets home, she opens up her laptop and searches for her in the places she always searches for her, on the internet. But, as always, she is not there. Normally Josie doesn't talk to Walter about Roxy. They never talk about the girls at all, it's just made everything easier somehow. But later on, as they sit side by side on the sofa eating the shepherd's pie, Josie turns to Walter and says, "Do you ever think you see her? Roxy." He throws her a look. She knows he'd planned not to talk to her tonight. He's still smarting from how horrible she's been to him the last few days. But this isn't the sort of question you can ignore because you're in a huff. And she sees his guard fall, and then another take its place. "What do you mean?"
"I mean when you're out. Do you see someone on the street and think it's her for a minute? And then realise it's not?
He's silent for a second before nodding.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Do you ever wonder if she's dead?
Of course I do. All the time.
They fall silent for a moment and eat their food, but the air is filled with things they both want to say, and Josie gets in first. You know, I'm probably going to tell Alex about the girls. His head snaps towards her.
What do you mean, tell her?
I'm going to tell her what happened. What we did. He narrows his eyes at her.
Are you mad?
Josie recoils slightly. She hates it when Walter says things like that. It's time, that's all. She'll be able to help us.
Help us? Fuck. Josie, she'll call the fucking police.
Good.
Oh my God. Oh Jesus. Josie, you actually are, aren't you? You're actually mad, genuinely. We've been through all of this. I thought we agreed.
No, no, we did not agree. We did not agree anything. We need to
do nothing, Josie. We need to do nothing. Fucking hell.
He slaps his forehead with his hand and pushes the tray of food off his lap so he can stand up. He starts to stride away from Josie and she pulls him back by his arm and then flinches when she sees his hand arcing towards her. He brings it back, quickly, to his side and carries on walking towards the bay window. It's happening, Walter. Whether you like it or not, I'm going to tell Alex everything. I can't live like this anymore. We're moving on.
I can't talk to you. You're insane. You're literally insane. I'm married to a fucking nutter. And I'm married to a fucking paedophile!
The air in the room freezes. For a second, neither Josie nor Walter breathes or moves. Finally, Walter speaks.
I'm sorry.
She wants to say it again. And then again and again, she wants to pummel her fists against his chest and spit the word into his face until he's choking on it. But she can't. It's gone. She collects their half-eaten plates of food, scrapes some into the blender for Erin, throws the rest into the bin. She purees the pie for Erin and spoons it into a bowl. She puts it on a tray with a strawberry-flavoured Müller Light. She leaves it outside Erin's room, her spare hand clamped over her mouth and nose to mask the smell. She's about to touch the door and then kiss her fingers, but she stops herself. She's starting to feel that Erin is part of the problem here. She's starting to feel like Erin is no longer on her side.
Friday, 12th of July. Nathan texts Alex at 6:30 p.m. I'm just having a quick one with Gio. Should be back before 7:30. Need me to pick anything up? Alex sighs heavily, her thumb over the keyboard, thinking of and discarding a dozen ripe responses, before simply typing, okay, turning off the screen and putting the phone down. She returns to the onion she'd been slicing for the dish she's cooking for Josie and Walter, turns it round to dice it, then slides it into the casserole dish where it sizzles in a pool of melted butter. Eliza is at her friend's house for a sleepover. Leon is watching TV in the living room. Alex thinks about the half-open bottle of wine in the fridge, thinks about pouring herself a large glass right now and glugging it. But she mustn't. She has to hold it together. She slices chicken breasts into strips and adds them to the frying onions. Nathan is still not home at 7:30. She stares at her phone desperately, even though she knows there won't be anything there. She sends a prayer out to the universe that Josie and Walter will be late. But at 7:32, the doorbell rings and she dries her hands, tidies her hair and heads to the front door. Hi. Josie stands on the top step in one of the dresses they'd chosen together at the boutique. Her hair held back in a French braid on one side of her head, clutching a bunch of pink roses and a bottle of expensive champagne. She beams at Alex brightly and slightly unnervingly. Josie does not usually beam. And then she leans into her and kisses her firmly on both cheeks. Hi, you look lovely. Then Josie turns and pulls Walter to her gently by his elbow. Alex, this is Walter. Walter, this is Alex. Walter smiles shyly at Alex and gives her his hand to shake. He has had a brutal haircut since the last time Alex saw him and is wearing brand new clothes with sharp crease marks down the legs and sleeves. Alex feels a stab of tenderness towards him, but then remembers that he is not the innocent old man that he appears to be. Come in, come in. I'm afraid Nathan isn't back from work yet, but he should be here any minute. She takes the pink roses from Josie and thanks her profusely. Then she puts the room temperature champagne in the fridge and offers them drinks, seats them on stools at the kitchen island, pushes bowls of crisps and nuts and dips towards them and checks on the pasta sauce.
You have a very nice home, says Walter, his fingers wrapped around the bottle of Peroni Alex has just passed to him.
Thank you.
How long have you lived here?
Walter has a monotone voice, which makes him sound as if he's being sarcastic. Oh, she replies, about 10 years. We were in a flat in Kensal Rise before that.
Is that where you come from? Kensal Rise?
No, I was brought up in Paddington, actually. Nathan and I moved here after we got married. And talking of Nathan, she locates her phone and touches the screen. Let me just see if he sent an update. There is no update from Nathan, and it is nearly 7:45. She calls him, and the call goes straight through to voicemail. She smiles tightly and says, gone straight through to voicemail. It must be on the tube.
After work drinks, says Walter.
Yes, I'd imagine.
What does he do, your husband?
He leases high-end commercial space to big companies. Walter nods thoughtfully, as if considering the legitimacy of this claim, and then grabs a handful of nuts from a bowl and tips them directly from the palm of his hand into his mouth. How are you, Josie? Alex asks, her voice sounding too high in her ears. Great, thanks. I love your hair like that. Alex gestures at the very professional French braid. Did you do it yourself? Yes, I used to do the girls' hair like this. I was always quite good at hairstyles. I just can't, says Alex. It hurts my brain trying to work out how to do it. I suppose I'm what you'd call dexterous. Sewing, dressmaking, knitting, crochet, all that kind of thing. Alex sees Josie throw a quick glance at Walter, who is staring unhappily at the label on his beer bottle. I've always been good at things like that, Josie says, flicking another look at her husband. Haven't I? Walter nods, his fingertips pulling at the beer label.
Yes, you have.
Alex turns to Walter. Tell me about yourself, Walter. You from around here originally?
No. I was brought up in Essex. Then my parents split up when I was 15 and I came and lived in Kilburn with my dad.
In the flat where you live now?
Yes. That's right.
And you raised your family there too?
Yes. Erin and Roxy.
And what's Erin up to tonight?
Oh, she'll just be gaming.
Oh, she's a gamer?
Yes, hardcore.
He laughs dryly, and Alex sees a strange look pass across Josie's face. Why hasn't Josie mentioned this aspect of Erin's existence to her, she wonders. She glances at the kitchen clock and sees that it is nearly 8:00. She apologises to Josie and Walter and calls Nathan again. This time it doesn't go through to voicemail. It rings out. And she feels a surge of hope that maybe he is right now halfway down the street, his tie loosened, his mood softened by a couple of pints,
ready to bring fresh energy to this strange gathering of people. More than anything in the world, she wishes Nathan was here. Nathan, with his loud voice and high-octane ways. She doesn't care how drunk he is. She just wants him here.
So, Walter says, you and Josie.
That's an odd thing, isn't it?
What, you mean?
She gestures at herself and then Josie.
Your friendship.
Yes.
Friendship, Alex replies. I thought you meant the podcast.
Podcast, he says. What podcast?
Oh, come on, Walter, says Josie. I told you this.
I don't think so.
I told you that Alex does podcasts.
Well, you might have mentioned it, but you didn't say she was doing one about you.
Oh, it's not about me. It's about us being birthday twins, me and Alex.
Alex feels an awkward cloud of dishonesty pass through the room. She'd been surprised by the fact that Walter had agreed to come along and essentially make himself a part of the project and thought that maybe he was more evolved than Josie had made him sound. But no. This was, Alex realised, a classic Josie manoeuvre. Like buying a pomchi without checking that it was really a pomchi, or allowing herself to be groomed into a lifelong relationship by a man old enough to be her own father. A sort of blundering, thoughtless, aimless approach to life. A do-the-thing-and-worry-about-it-later approach. And so now, Alex has to go along with the subterfuge. She clears her throat and smiles. Can I top you up? She asks brightly before excusing herself to get something from the larder. When she comes back, Walter and Josie are sitting in silence, chewing crisps. Alex looks at the time. It's been 10 minutes since she tried calling Nathan, and he should be home by now. She calls him again. It goes to voicemail. She sighs and brings up Giovanni's number. She wouldn't normally, but she cannot do this by herself. She simply cannot.
Oh, Gio. Hi, it's Alex. I'm sorry to bother you. But are you still with Nathan?
The background of the call is frenetic with the sounds of laughter and music.
Oh, hi, Al, yeah. Hold on, here he is.
A moment later, Nathan is on the line.
Fuck,
he says, drawling already, and it's not even 8:30.
Fuck, Alex, oh, fuck.
I'm leaving right now, literally leaving right this second. I'll get a cab, okay? Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll see you in half an hour. Start eating without me, though, if you need to.
Alex forces a stiff smile as she ends the call. Everything okay? Asks Josie.
Yeah, he's on his way. Lost track of time. Said to start without him. So I'll get the pasta on now, shall I?
I'm sorry, Alex, but I think that's disgusting. Alex stops halfway to the tap with the pasta pan and turns back to Josie.
Seriously, I'm sorry. I could hear him on the phone, slurring. And here you are, slaving over a nice meal for him, entertaining guests, looking so nice. Who does he think he is?
Alex feels her breath catch in the back of her throat. Suddenly, she feels threatened. It's the deathly tone of Josie's voice, the otherness of her. Walter, by her side, breathing so heavily through his nose that Alex can hear it. She thinks of Leon next door, in his big headphones, his legs tucked up under him on the sofa that still makes him look tiny, even now he's getting big, and she wonders what she has done. She thinks of Josie on her doorstep, rifling through her recycling box, taking home the old magazine. She thinks of Walter keeping Josie locked up at home as a young woman without a key, waiting for him to get home from work. And then she thinks of Josie's daughters with the dead eyes, and she suddenly wants to scrap the whole thing. Get the champagne out of the fridge and hand it back to them, hustle them down the hallway, out of the front door, and forget that she had ever allowed Josie Fair into her life. But it is too late now. They are here, on her kitchen stools, eating sweet chili flavour kettle chips, waiting for her chicken, bacon and spinach Alfredo, insulting her husband. She can feel Josie's eyes boring into her, and she brings the stiff smile back to her face and says, "Oh, it's no big deal. Friday night, you know. I'm sure he's not the only man out there losing track of time. Anyway, what else can I get you? Another beer, Walter." He nods and thanks her, and she passes him a cold beer. Then Josie says, "Why don't you show Walter your amazing recording studio, Alex? He loves stuff like that." Alex throws Walter an uncertain glance, but he nods at her and says, "Yeah, I'd like that. If it's all right with you." "Yes, absolutely. You coming, Josie?" Josie smiles. "No," she says. "That's okay. You go. I've already seen it." Alex leads Walter through the garden, which is all lit up with solar lamps and fairy lights. She unlocks the studio door and flicks on the switches. "Wow," says Walter. "This is pretty cool." He eyes every detail of the room and asks her questions about the wiring and the electrics, which she cannot possibly answer. "You'd have to ask Nathan," she says. "He was the one who had it all done for me." They share a dry exchange about the general lack of Nathan, and then finally, Alex finds the impetus to ask Walter the question she's wanted to ask him since the day she met Josie. "May I ask you about you and Josie? About how you met?" She sees Walter blanch slightly before recovering himself and taking a slow sip from his beer bottle. "Depends what she's told you, really." "Well, I'd really like to just hear it from your side." He shrugs and sighs. "I knew Jojo from when she was a kid. I was friends with her mum first. Then Jojo and I started hanging out a bit. She was too mature for people her age, you know. Found them tedious. Comes from being an only child, I think. I was the same. Always preferred the company of grown-ups. And yeah, one thing led to another, and it turned out that somewhere along the line, we'd fallen for each other. And I suppose it must look weird to some people, me being so much older than her. But it's never felt weird to us. Not once." Alex nods slowly, hypnotized slightly by the bass monotone of Walter's voice, the way he makes opinion sound like fact, the lack of nuance, space, dichotomy in the way he speaks. "Yes," she thinks, "yes, I can see that. I can see how that might happen between two people." But then she snaps out of it, remembers that this man bought a 15-year-old girl a gold bracelet for her birthday, took her to the pub, and poured vodka in her lemonade. All while married to somebody else. "And your ex-wife," she continues, "was she much younger than you?"
"No, not really. She was 10 years younger than me."
"And how old were you when you met her?"
"Oh, God."
He scratches the back of his neck and screws up his eyes.
"I must have been late 20s, I suppose."
Alex lets the maths of this pronouncement float between them, unremarked upon.
"You know," Walter says thoughtfully, peering at Alex through narrowed eyes, "she's a tricky one, my Jojo. She gives this impression, doesn't she, of being simple."
"Simple?"
"Yes, you know, like there's not much going on in her head. And if there's one thing I've learned about her over the years, it's that there is actually too much going on in her head. She's not who she makes out to be. Not at all."
His words sit there like ticking bombs. Alex nods and says, "Yes, I think there is more to her than meets the eye."
"That's putting it mildly," he says.
"Would you," Alex begins uncertainly, "how would you feel about talking to me a little bit for my podcast?"
"This birthday twins one?"
Yes. Alex pinches her bottom lip between her thumb and forefinger and eyes him anxiously.
But what would it have to do with me? I'm not your birthday twin.
Well, no, you're not. But you're married to one, and you've shared most of her life journey with her. It'd be great to get a few nuggets of insight from you, just for context.
She watches him for a reaction. It comes slowly, as a shake of the head.
No, he says. I think not.
But for what it's worth, from my side, Jojo's got what you might call an elastic relationship with the truth.
Elastic, she repeats.
Yeah. She, how can I put it? When she doesn't like the reality of things, she finds a reality she prefers.
You mean everything she's been telling me about herself, about her life, is untrue?
Well, no. I wouldn't go that far. But you can't believe everything she says. Just keep your wits about you.
Alex narrows her eyes at Walter, assessing how much he is trying to manipulate her. She says,
Ah, okay. I'll bear that in mind.
Probably best not to say anything to Jojo about this conversation, you know?
Why not say anything to Josie?
Just... He pauses.
Josie just likes to control things, you know?
If she knew that I'd been talking to you, she would feel like she was losing control of you.
Of me?
Yes. Of you and the whole situation. He sighs. Believe me, I know Josie better than anyone, and she's a control freak. And you don't even realise you're being controlled until it's too late.
Alex stares at Walter for a moment. Once again, she is struck by the sheer blandness of him, the impenetrable wall of nothingness between his physical being and the rest of the world. Yet he is clearly a master gaslighter. Behind the dead eyes lies the soul of a groomer and a liar and an abuser. She feels a bolt of ice shoot through her core and shivers slightly.
She serves the pasta half an hour later at the kitchen table. Nathan has still not returned. The conversation limps on. They discuss the primary school that they have in common, working out which teachers are still there and which have left. They discuss the state of the world in a stolid, one-dimensional way. Leon walks in at one point, and Alex is able to leave the table for a couple of minutes to get him a snack and a drink, and to locate a charging cable for him. They discuss how delicious the food is, and Alex manages to stretch out the description of the recipe into a 5-minute spiel.
Anyway, says Josie after a somewhat painful silence, where's that husband of yours? Maybe you should give him another call?
Yes, says Alex, maybe. I'll give him another 10 minutes.
Hardly worth him coming back now, Josie says. I mean, dinner's over.
Josie shakes her head sadly and tuts under her breath.
Terrible, she says. I'm so sorry, Alex. You poor thing.
Alex feels herself tense up with a weird defensive anger. I'm not a poor thing, she replies tersely. I really am not.
She gets to her feet, the chair scraping noisily against the floor tiles, then collects the plates together loudly. She drops them on the counter above the dishwasher with a clatter, and then goes into the hallway and yells, Bedtime! Now! To a startled-looking Leon. When she comes back to the kitchen, Josie and Walter collecting themselves together, and the atmosphere between them is horrendous.
Well, says Josie, thank you so much for a lovely evening. Food was delicious, but I think we'd best let you get on now.
Alex drops her head into her chest. She sighs loudly and says, I am so sorry, so, so sorry, but yes, and thank you for coming.
Walter brings his empty beer bottle and places it gently on the counter. He looks like he's about to say something, but then the moment passes and he turns to leave. She sees them to the door, and Josie pats her arm and gives her a strange hug.
Men, she whispers into Alex's ear. Fucking men.
Alex cleans the kitchen after they leave. Then she sits and finishes the third of a bottle of wine that was left of the one she'd been sharing with Josie. When the kitchen is dark and the dishwasher is running and she feels drunk enough, she gets to her feet and goes to the living room where Leon is still sitting in the dark, curled into the big sofa, the cat at his side, staring at the TV screen with wide, exhausted eyes. She sits down next to him and gently pulls his headphones away from his head.
It's late, baby. We both need to go to bed now.
Can I have 5 more minutes? He asks, sweetly.
The sofa feels nice. The cat is purring. She nods and says,
Okay, I'll put my timer on.
She sets the timer on her phone to go off in 5 minutes and leans back into the sofa, pulling her son's feet onto her lap.
Why were those people here?
Leon asks after a moment.
Oh, she replies, rubbing his toes absent-mindedly. I'm interviewing them for a podcast.
He nods.
Then he turns to look at her and says, Why was the lady standing outside your studio?
The lady who was here?
Yes, the lady who was here. She was standing outside your studio when you were in there with that old man, like she was listening. I saw her through those doors. She looked really cross. Really, really cross.
10 p.m. Josie and Walter walk home in silence. Josie feels sick. All the rich food. She'd expected something more sophisticated from Alex than stodgy pasta and can't help feeling a bit short-changed. And all the wine. She's cross that her expensive champagne never made it out of the fridge. And cross with the way that Alex just dumped her roses in a cheap-looking vase and didn't trim the stems or fluff them out at all. They weren't the cheap ones. They cost £12. They deserved better. And the whole night, of course, was completely ruined by Nathan doing what he'd done. Alex had been distracted and sharp. She had not been a good host, and it had not been a good evening. Once home, Josie opens the front door and calls out into the darkness of their flat.
Fred! Mummy's home!
The dog comes hurtling towards her and jumps into her arms. She takes the dog out for a wee and then brings him back in again. She notices that Walter has discarded his new Primark outfit and is back in joggers and a baggy t-shirt. The smart shirt and trousers left pooled on the floor by the linen basket like a silent two fingers up at her. She passes Erin's room and puts her ear to the door, listens to the sound of her gaming chair squeaking. She thinks of the little boy in the pyjamas on the sofa at Alex's house, with the huge headphones on, staring blankly at the screen for hours and hours, totally ignored and neglected, and thinks, really, what's the difference? Is she really such a bad parent? Who's to know how he'll end up 10, 20 years from now? She watches Walter take a beer from the fridge, open it and go to the table in the bay window. He clears his throat and lifts the lid of his laptop. They have still not spoken to each other. The atmosphere between them is worse than it's ever been in all the time they've been together.
You were an embarrassment tonight, she says to Walter. He ignores her. She hears him sigh heavily through his nose.
The whole thing, Walter. I wanted to die.
Mm-hmm, he intones, his gaze on his laptop, his fingertips clicking the keys.
Walter! She shouts. I'm talking to you!
Yes, I can hear that.
So talk to me.
Talk to you about what, exactly?
About tonight. about how you embarrassed me. Finally, his fingertips stop clicking off the keys and he turns and looks at her. He looks so tired and so old that it startles her for a moment. "In what way," he says, "did I embarrass you?" Just by being you.
That's nice, Jojo.
I'm not trying to be nice. The whole evening was a disaster. I'd been so looking forward to it and it was horrible. And you just sat there with your stupid beer looking like everything was beneath you. You made no effort at all. I had to do all the work.
All the work? What work? Listen, I really don't know what's going on between you and that woman, but I can tell you something for certain. She's no friend of yours. She doesn't even like you.
Josie feels the breath inside her lungs freeze and stop. Of course she does.
No, Josie. She doesn't. She's just trying to get inside that tiny, weird brain of yours and work out what makes you tick.
For a moment, it feels to Josie that she is in the eye of a storm, that the universe has fragmented into a million tiny pieces and is swirling and whirling around her, that she is all that is still in the world. She closes her eyes, but the feeling grows stronger. Stop calling me weird.
Well, stop being weird.
Stop it!
I'm not sure I can do this anymore.
Do what?
You, Jojo. I can't do you.
And what do you think it's like for me? Walter, living with you, living like this. She gestures around the room. I can't do this anymore either. I'm at the end of my tether. I can't keep it all locked inside. It's killing me, Walter, it's killing me. I need someone to know. I have to tell Alex.
Walter stares at her through tired, disappointed eyes, and he says slowly and coldly,
you really are stupid, aren't you? Stupid as they get.
At the sound of these words, Josie feels the swirling fragments of the universe slow down and thicken and then clear. And all that is left is red hot fury that feels as if it's burning her from the inside out. She thinks of the things she heard Walter saying to Alex in the recording studio, poisoning her with his vile lies, and she knows that it is here at last, the moment she has been waiting for. She feels certainty rip through her like a cyclone.
Part 2. Saturday, 13th of July. The familiar chime of the Ring doorbell slices into Alex's dream. At first, she thinks that it is her alarm, that it is 6:30 and she must get up and get the children ready for school. Then her eye catches the time, and she sees that it is 3:02 a.m, and she remembers that last night was Friday and that today is Saturday, and then, and only then, does she register the fact that the other side of the bed is unslept in. Fuck's sake, she mutters to herself, pulling back the duvet and ripping herself from the warmth of her bed. Fuck's sake! She tiptoes down the stairs and hears the ring bell chime again, and her blood heats with rage. Fucking Nathan, waking up the fucking children. She wrenches open the door, ready to flounce silently, furiously back to bed, but then stops and gasps when she sees that it is not Nathan. It is Josie.
Josie stands, defeated, her shoulders slumped and tears streaking through a mask of grazes and dried-up blood on her face. The dog peers over the top of his denim carrier.
Oh my God, Josie! Oh my God, what happened?
A choked sob emerges, but no words. Alex opens the door wider and says, God, come in. She helps Josie through the door and into the kitchen, where she sits her carefully on the sofa. What happened, Josie? Please, you have to tell me.
It was Walter,
she says through juddering sobs.
He attacked me.
Walter did this?
Yes. And it's not the first time. It's when he's been drinking, he just sees red.
Here, says Alex. Let me get a wet cloth, get this face cleaned up, see if there's any damage. Josie nods, defeatedly. Alex takes a clean tea towel from a drawer and runs it under the tap. She dabs Josie's face gently with it, revealing a horribly swollen and split lip and scuff marks down both cheekbones.
The back of my head too, I think.
She turns her head and Alex sees that there is encrusted blood on her crown, beneath which is a small split in her scalp.
Any dizziness?
Alex asks. Josie shakes her head.
No, I feel okay. Just a bit shocked.
Shall I call an ambulance?
No, please don't. It will just set off a load of things happening that I really can't deal with right now. And I'm fine, really.
Alex takes the bloodied tea towel, rinses it under the tap, squeezes it out, and hands it to Josie. Then she fills the kettle and switches it on.
What happened, Josie? She asks. I mean, everything seemed okay when you left. Well, yes and no. I mean, Walter was grumpy, obviously, because of Nathan not coming. I think he thought it was really rude, which it was. He wouldn't talk to me the whole walk home, and then he had another beer when we got home, and things sort of escalated. He called me all sorts of horrible names. He told me I was stupid, and I saw red and went for him.
You mean you attacked him?
Yes. Well, no. I intended to, and I know he might look like an old man, but he's very strong still. He's big, and he overpowered me completely. Just kept pounding and pounding and pounding, and then...
Then what? Alex catches her breath.
Then Erin walked in. Erin came in and saw what he was doing, and she tried to get him off me, but he hit her too.
Oh my God, that's just horrific. Is she okay?
Yes, she's fine. She's at a friend's house.
And where's Walter?
I don't know. Still there, I suppose.
Tears fall from Josie's eyes again, and she dabs them away with the damp tea towel. Alex breathes in and then places her hand over Josie's. You know we should call the police. Josie glares at her.
No, she says. No, please don't.
But Josie, look what he's done to you. He's committed a terrible crime.
You say he's done it before. He hurt your child. No. I'm not having the police getting involved. Absolutely not.
But what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to go back there?
I'm not going back there.
And what about your mum? Have you told her? Josie widens her eyes at Alex and groans. Fresh tears start falling.
I can't tell my mum. She'll just say it's all my own fault. She'll take his side.
Take his side? When he's done this to you? Of course she won't.
You've met my mum. You've seen what she's like. She thinks I'm the lowest of the low.
No, that's...
It is true.
I cannot tell my mum. I can't tell her any of it.
But you have to tell someone, surely. I'm telling you. For God's sake, I'm telling you.
Yes, and I'm glad you've told me, but...
But what?
I just think you need to tell someone in your inner sanctum.
I haven't got an inner sanctum.
Josie wails.
I've got Walter, and I've got the girls, and I've got Fred, and I've got you.
Alex feels the contents of her stomach curdle slightly at Josie's intonation of the word you. Sounds proprietorial and odd. No, she wants to say. No, you don't have me. But she puts her arm around Josie's shaking shoulders and squeezes her reassuringly. Let me get you a cup of tea, she says. Unless you prefer something stronger. Josie looks at Alex with red, glassy eyes and says, Do you have brandy? Alex smiles and gets to her feet. I certainly do. Josie sighs deeply while Alex gets the brandy. Any sign of Nathan? No. Looks like he's decided to stay out. Josie tarts softly. Men, she says again. Men. Alex doesn't react with the words she wants to utter. She doesn't say, Please do not ever compare your elderly, dead-eyed, paedophiliac gaslighter of a husband with mine, who has a drink problem but is fundamentally decent. Instead, she gently pops the cork back in the brandy bottle and brings the glass to Josie, who takes it from her with a shaking hand. What are you going to do? Alex asks, knowing even as she does so that Josie is assuming that she will stay here, but hoping, desperately, that she will respond otherwise.
I don't know.
I could talk to my friend Mary. She's very involved with a domestic violence charity. She could suggest a safe place for you to be. I can give her a call right now.
No, don't disturb her. It's fine. I'm fine. If it's okay with you, Alex, I'd feel safest just staying here with you tonight.
Alex feels her insides curl up in a knot.
Oh, she says. I mean, I'm not sure. It's a bit...
Josie's eyes widen and she draws her body in on itself, recoiling slightly from Alex's words. She looks as though she might be about to cry, and Alex says,
Sure, of course.
I'll make up the spare room for you.
It'll be fine.
She sees Josie's body language soften immediately. Her shoulders grow round. She hears a tremulous sigh come from her quivering mouth and then the words,
Thank you. Thank you so much.
10 a.m. I am literally the worst person in the world. I can either come home now and prostrate myself at your feet, or I can kill myself. Your choice. After the weirdness of the previous night, Alex is too relieved to hear from Nathan to be angry anymore. She replies quickly, Please don't kill yourself. I need you. We have a problem. Get back soon. He replies with a gif of a man running, and Alex smiles, despite herself. Josie is in the guest bedroom on the top floor. Alex peered through a small gap in the door earlier, and the dog, perched at the foot of the bed, lifted his top lip briefly and began growling, so she'd quietly retreated. But that was 2 hours ago, and there's still no sign of her. Alex tiptoes back up the stairs and peers once more through the gap in the door. A smell hits her violently, a smell she recognises all too well from her own dog-owning days. In the corner of the room, thankfully on wooden floorboards, is an ark of tiny dog droppings and a puddle of urine. Fred bares his teeth at her, and this time she lets him bark. The noise rouses Josie from her deep sleep, and she sits up suddenly. Alex is taken aback by the state of her face, which looks worse this morning than it did last night. The bruises blooming into vivid pools of mustard and mauve.
Oh, she says, blinking blindly into the half-light. Oh, God. Hi.
Hi, says Alex. How are you doing?
Oh, God, she says again. Sorry, I was out cold. What time is it?
Just gone 10.
I'm sorry. I had no idea.
She turns her head to the side and sniffs the air. Her eyes find the pile of dog mess and she groans.
Oh, no. I am so, so sorry. I slept through his toilet time. Poor baby. Just give me some cleaning stuff and I'll deal with it.
Josie climbs painfully from the bed. She is wearing Alex's toast pyjamas, which she lent her last night.
It's fine. I'll do it. You get back into bed. I'll bring you some coffee.
Josie nods gratefully and swings her legs back into the bed.
Thank you so much, Alex. That would be amazing.
Alex passes Leon on the stairs on her way back down.
Why is she still here?
He whispers.
She had an accident, Alex replies, on her way home. I'm just going to take care of her for the day.
She looks really scary,
he whispers.
You saw her? He nods.
I peeped in.
Her dog growled at me.
Well, she'll be gone by bedtime tonight, so let's just be kind to her for now, yes? Leon nods again. Alex makes Josie a cappuccino and brings it up to the guest room with a roll of kitchen towel and a spray cleaner. She places the coffee by the side of Josie's bed and collects Fred's droppings into a sheet of paper, puts them in the toilet in the ensuite, then sprays and cleans the whole area. She pulls down the sash window, saying, Let's get some fresh air in here, shall we? I can walk the dog for you, if you like.
Oh, yes, I'm sure he'd love that. His harness is in the carrier, over there.
Alex passes her the harness and Josie straps him into it and then clips on the lead. The moment he sees the lead, his demeanour changes and he happily walks off with Alex without a backward glance at Josie. Alex takes him to the park. It is a grey morning, but with the promise of better weather to come. She allows her head to clear as she walks. She thinks back to her encounter with Walter the previous night, when she'd taken him to look at her recording studio. She thinks of the things he'd said about Josie. She's not who she makes out to be. Not at all. Josie just likes to control things. He'd described her as wanting to be seen as simple, as acting as though there was nothing in her head when really there was too much. He'd described her as having an elastic relationship with the truth. And as with everything that Walter had said last night, it could be taken more than one way. He was either painting her badly to make himself look better, or he was telling the truth. And if he was telling the truth, then what did that mean? What was in Josie's head? Good things or bad things? From the very start of the project, Alex had been attracted by Josie's slight weirdness, the denim, the old husband, the clipped, detached way in which she spoke. It would be easy to assume that all her weirdness was a result of having spent her childhood with a narcissistic mother and her adult life with a man like Walter. But what if the weirdness was innate? What if the weirdness was what had led her into such a strange marriage in the first place? What, she wonders, if Josie was actually mad? And as she thinks this, she pictures her baby boy alone in the house with a stranger. She picks up the dog, tucks him into the denim carrier, and walks home as fast as she can.
10:30 a.m. Josie hears the front door click open and then slam closed. She thinks it must be Alex back from the park with the dog and peers down the stairs. But it's not Alex. It's him. Her stupid husband. He looks worse than she feels. His red hair is stuck together in clumps. His suit jacket is slung over his shoulder and he's wearing sunglasses even though it's cloudy. She sees Leon run up the hallway and into his dad's arms. You smell bad, says Leon. Thanks, mate, says Nathan. And then his gaze heads up the staircase and he spots Josie. She sees him jump slightly, a look of horror passing over his face.
Oh my God, he says, clutching his heart. Sorry, you made me jump. It's Josie, yes?
Josie nods.
It was just the pyjamas. They're Alex's, aren't they? Moment of a cognitive dissonance. How are you?
Well, says Josie, gesturing at her facial injuries. Not the best.
My God. I hope that didn't happen here.
Josie grimaces. Does he really think this is something to be joked about?
No, she says.
Of course not. Nathan blinks at her and then turns towards the living room.
Any idea where Alex is?
He asks.
She's taken Fred out to the park. She should be back any minute.
Fred?
My dog.
Oh, he says, right. Well, I'll,
see you.
Then he drops his jacket on the newel post at the bottom of the stairs and heads into the kitchen. Josie goes back to her room and changes into the clothes that Alex gave her this morning. A white t-shirt and some loose blue trousers. She unbraids her hair and brushes it through with her fingers, watches the flakes of dried blood drift to the floor, pushes it back into a ponytail and ties it with a band. She brushes her teeth in the ensuite, admiring the lovely tiles that have been arranged in a herringbone style.
So simple, yet so effective.
After she's brushed her teeth, she examines her appearance in the mirror. She looks terrible. The bruises have spread and changed colour overnight. Her bottom lip looks like a split tomato, and the blood has dried to a black crust. She smiles and the scab breaks open a little, releasing a tiny droplet of scarlet blood. She dabs it away with the tip of her tongue and then heads downstairs.
So, says Nathan as she walks into the kitchen, what happened to your,
He describes her face with his hands.
An angry man, she says.
Seriously?
He looks up at her through his pale eyelashes, his lips pulled back into a letterbox of disquiet.
Yes. My husband did it.
Oh my God, that's awful.
Yes, it's terrible.
Only slightly more terrible than a husband who doesn't come home for a dinner that his wife has cooked for him and spends the whole night out somewhere in his work clothes. Josie relishes the symphony of expressions that plays across Nathan's doughy, booze-wrecked face. She stares at him and waits for him to find a response.
Well, yeah, he says. That was pretty shit.
It's an issue.
His left eyebrow scoots up his face.
Yes, he says tersely. But rather an issue between me and Alex, I'd say.
Well, not last night, it wasn't. It was painful for all three of us. And look what it led to.
Nathan looks aghast.
I'm sorry, what?
Josie sighs.
The only way I could persuade my husband to come here last night was by telling him that you were going to be here. I.e. another man, because he's a man's man, Walter. And he came under duress. And you didn't show up, so he felt like a prize idiot. It was a horrible evening, and he took it out on me.
Nathan's face is a picture.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that, he says, flushing slightly. Really sorry.
Josie purses her mouth.
You should be a better husband.
Nathan blinks at her.
Wow, he says after a moment. Wow.
The front door clicks again and they both turn to see Alex walk in, looking slightly breathless and stressed. Her face softens when she sees Nathan, which makes Josie feel bizarrely furious.
Hi, says Nathan.
Hi, says Alex,
taking the dog from the carrier and passing him over to Josie.
I see you and Josie have found each other.
We certainly have, Nathan replies dryly. Josie sees him throw a meaningful look at Alex, trying to send her a message with his eyes. She sees Alex frown slightly, trying to work out what the message might be.
Anyway, Josie says, I might just go and have another lie down if that's okay with you, Alex. I'm still feeling completely shattered.
Yes, says Alex, of course. Can I get you anything? Some breakfast?
Oh, no. Thank you. I don't have much of an appetite.
No, of course.
Well, just message me or shout down if you need anything, won't you?
Josie smiles wanly and nods. She passes close to Nathan as she leaves the kitchen, sees him recoil slightly, smells the fumes coming from him, and feels a surge of dark fury. At the top of the stairs, she stops and waits, listens to the conversation coming from the kitchen. There's a long, telling silence, which she knows consists of Alex and Nathan exchanging looks. Then she hears muted, urgent whispering, whispering that grows louder and louder until she is able to make out the words,
Well, what was I supposed to do?
From Alex, and the words,
Fucking ridiculous,
from Nathan. And then she hears Leon come into the kitchen and ask for something to eat, and the conversation changes and moves on. She goes back to the spare bedroom and closes the door. She opens her handbag on the bed and roots around one of the interior pockets until she feels the hard edges of the key that she'd taken from the flat last night. As her fingers find it, she experiences a sequence of flashbacks. The heft of flesh and bone, the splash and spatter of blood, electric light strobing in and out between splayed fingers, the metal taste of blood, the salt taste of sweaty hands, the sounds of muffled crying. She sees herself, as if from above, curled on the floor, the dog snuffling at her head, and then she hears the silence that followed, broken only by the hiss of a bus opening its doors at the stop outside the window, the whimper of the dog, the rumble of the bus leaving again. She takes the key and she slides it under the mattress.